Welcome to episode 10 of the fifth season of Justice with John Carpe, a podcast from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. I'm the show's producer, Kevin Steele, and with us today is lawyer Marty Moore. Marty is here to take a look at a situation that involves a public library, the CEO of that library, a newspaper column the CEO wrote, and a board of directors that fired the CEO for the newspaper column she wrote. Those are the broad strokes. And here are some specifics. The public library is in the historic town of Niagara-on-the-Lake, a pretty place on the southern shore of Lake Ontario, just east of St. Catharines and north of Niagara Falls. The town has a population of about 20,000. The library CEO is named Kathy Simpson. The column she wrote was titled Censorship and What We Are Allowed to Read. Subhead, Public Libraries Should Be Home to Many Viewpoints, Not Just Progressive Ones. It was published in the Lake Report in February. I will read the whole of that piece in a moment and then bring in Marty to comment. But first, on with the story. A person named Matt French wrote a letter to the editor that was published on March 1st in Niagara Now, a daily regional news site. Mr. French complained about Simpson's column, calling it, quote, pure right-wing propaganda, unquote. He wrote it was divisive and said that Simpson was, quote, promoting inflammatory statements on behalf of an American political advocacy organization, unquote. He wondered whether, quote, our public library is taking a stand against diversity, equity, and inclusion, unquote. That started the ball rolling. People took sides, a hearing was convened, and ultimately Kathy Simpson was fired by the board of directors. That's where the situation stands at the moment. Now, I'm going to read the column. I should say I will post a link to this in the show notes for anyone who wants to eyeball it for themselves. But for you audio fans who like the eyes-free stuff so you can multitask as you listen, work in the garage, garden, or drive, here goes. This appeared in the Lake Report, a print publication which promotes itself as, quote, Canada's most decorated community newspaper, unquote. Opinion, censorship, and what we are allowed to read. Public libraries should be home to many viewpoints, not just progressive ones. February 21st, 2024, by Kathy Simpson. Special to the Lake Report. Almost as long as there have been libraries, there have been people asking for books to be removed from library shelves. The American Library Association reported book ban requests in 2023 were the highest on record, and we also see them on the rise in Canada. But what often goes unreported in both countries is another type of censorship happening behind the scenes in libraries. This hidden library censorship takes two forms: the vigorous defense of books promoting diversity of identity, but little to no defense of books promoting diversity of viewpoint, and the purchase of books promoting quote-unquote progressive ideas over quote-unquote traditional ideas. Librarians are quick to defend books written by authors from quote-unquote oppressed groups and books that promote critical social justice. Library shelves are filled with titles offering progressive takes on topics like systemic racism, transgender ideology, equity, and decolonization. This would be fine, except books offering other points of view on these topics are rarely defended or even purchased. As a result, library collections are increasingly biased and offer one viewpoint justified by the claim the other viewpoints are quote-unquote harmful and must be excluded. I first became aware of the pressure to suppress certain viewpoints in 2019, when writer and feminist Megan Murphy booked a room at the Toronto Public Library to discuss the impact of transgender rights on the rights of women and children. The Toronto Library was under immense pressure not to allow Murphy's talk, but thankfully, city librarian Vickery Bowles stood up for intellectual freedom and free speech, and the talk went forward. As Bowles stated, while the Toronto Library, quote, encourages public debate and discussion about differing ideas, we also encourage those with opposing or conflicting viewpoints to respectfully challenge each other's ideas and not the library's democratic mandate to provide space for both, unquote. A lot has changed since 2019, And many librarians no longer encourage those with differing viewpoints to respectfully challenge each other. In fact, viewpoints that don't conform to progressive agendas are rarely represented in library collections, and anyone who challenges this is labeled a bigot. But the tide is beginning to turn. When the Peel District School Board removed all books published before 2008 to, quote, promote anti-racism, inclusivity, and critical consciousness, unquote, there was a big outcry, including from students. The CBC covered the story. I began talking with librarians who believe in library neutrality and pluralism a year ago, and was introduced to an organization called the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, FAIR. It is an American organization with Canadian chapters, and now has a library chapter. It stands for the following. 1. Civil rights and liberties guaranteed to each individual, including freedom of speech and expression, equal protection under the law, and the right to personal privacy. 2. Defense of individuals threatened or persecuted for speech, or those held to a different set of rules for language or conduct based on their skin color, ancestry, or other immutable characteristics. 3. Respectful disagreement because bad ideas are best confronted with good ideas and never with dehumanization, deplatforming, or blacklisting. 4. Objective truth that is discoverable and scientific research untainted by political agenda. 5. Pro-human and compassionate opposition to intolerance and racism rooted in dignity and our common humanity. FAIR is marking the 40th anniversary of Canada's Freedom to Read Week by asking all writers, publishers, library workers, teachers, and readers to acknowledge that pressure to suppress the availability of books can come from across the political spectrum, and that librarian activism restricts freedom to read by suppressing heterodox viewpoints. The organization supports Freedom to Read Week's principles of intellectual freedom, freedom of expression, freedom to read, and resistance to censorship. In addition, FAIR in Libraries supports the pluralistic principles of viewpoint diversity, library neutrality, and human individuality and autonomy. As library professionals, we ask our colleagues to recognize their biases and recommit to striving for library neutrality and viewpoint diversity in collections. We ask our colleagues to ensure Freedom to Read Week does not become Freedom to Read What We Decide You Should Read Week. We will only be truly free to read when authors are no longer afraid to write on any topic, publishers no longer prioritize an author's identity over their work's merit, teachers no longer present students with only one viewpoint on issues, and library workers ensure their collections are balanced to include a variety of perspectives on controversial topics. And then there's a contributor description. Kathy Simpson is CEO of the Niagara-on-the-Lake Public Library. End. So, Marty, that opinion gets a person fired from a library in Canada. Censorship in libraries is back in the news. What say you to this?
It certainly is, Kevin, and this story has played out rather publicly there in Niagara-on-the-Lake. To see, you know, a public debate about free speech, well, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. To see people fired for participating in that discussion, that's a bad thing. And this is no new fight that we're in. The Justice Center has been involved in library issues going back almost as long as I've been with the Justice Center. In fact, there was a situation at the St. Catharines Public Library that it got to the point where we had to, again, send a warning letter to ward off censorship there. In that case, it was successful. And then your viewers may recall Mary Stanko. She was an elderly woman, published a weekly newsletter that was put in the newsletter flyer holder there at the public library. But she went on in one of her letters to talk about the charter's preamble. And of course, this is where we mention God in our charter, something the courts don't often talk about. But whereas we believe that Canada is founded on principles that establish the supremacy of God and the rule of law, she went on to extrapolate on that And the library said, no, no can do. We're not going to allow you to publish your free letter in our new community newsletter flyer folder at the library. We sent a letter. They ended up getting a lawyer involved. And, you know, to their credit, the St. Catharines Public Library said, look, we did the wrong thing here. We do support free speech. And let's get that letter back in the flyer holder. And we'll move on from there. You know, going on from another situation, the Vancouver Public Library and the Megan Murphy events of 2019, 2020, Justice Center followers may recall that being a big situation where Megan Murphy, you know, who advocates for women's rights, was going to host a talk with other speakers there at the library. And there was just such an outrage against the idea that a library would hold a talk by a woman speaking to other women and supporters about women's issues. And somehow this was viewed as terribly discriminatory. They attempted to put a security fee on the event. Justice Center lawyers got involved, and the event did go forward. I actually attended the event with my wife as well. Quite a rowdy bunch of protesters out there, again, expressing their constitutional rights. But the event went forward, and kudos to the Vancouver Public Library for doing that.
But, okay, now, of course, here we have a different situation where somebody appears to have been fired for their speech.
From the reports, for sure, we do seem to see that that is what happened to the CEO of the Niagara-on-the-Lake Public Library. And there's a couple different news stories there, Kevin, that are showing up. And one of them is actually at the board meeting. Of course, as you know, there's a published story, a published opinion piece by the CEO, and followed up by some criticism from a local resident. Totally valid criticism. But then this government body, a public library board, exercising authority through statute in Ontario, decides that it wants to weigh in and take sides on a matter of public discourse. And you'd expect a public library board to be taking sides in favor of a diversity of views being established, of a diversity of material being permitted in a library, which is exactly what the CEO, Ms. Simpson, was advocating for. But no, they took the side of this elusive concept of equity, and how, in the words of this local resident, Mr. French, somehow Ms. Simpson and the group she was associating with, a group called FAIR, were not equity-supporting groups. And such language is almost beyond comprehension, because when you try to nail a definition down, as I have in cross-examination, it almost means anything that we don't like, well, that's what's against equity, because equity is what we like. And that's about as good of a definition as you'll find. It's not about equality and equal treatment, but it's about whatever they want. And so actually you could look up at the article. Mr. French actually appeared before the Public Library Board after they had essentially, brought this issue up. They're planning on, you know, taking some kind of action against the CEO. And Mr. French appears at this meeting, again, exercising his rights. He's allowed to do that. I do not fault Mr. French. I fault the government body, the Library Board, acting in this way. But Mr. French says, well, Ms. Simpson, quote, advocates for libraries to add to their collection material which negatively portrays, quote, equity. So on that line of logic, anything I say now is going to be censored as well, because, you know, equity is a concept that I've never seen properly or solidly defined. And he argued to the library board that she wants to add books that argue against systemic racism and which combat transgendered ideology. And this is being reported in the media there. Well, I mean, these are topics being dealt with by people. If you want to look at a topic and be informed, you would expect to find a book that says, yes, society is full of systemic racism, or no, society has come a long way, and in fact, it is not systemically racist. Or maybe a book looking at the pros and cons of different ideologies, including, transgender ideology, if you will. But the fact that she, the library CEO, was advocating for books on both sides of these issues, well, that was too much for Mr. French. But again, kudos for Mr. French. He's exercising his freedom of expression. What happens to a public library board when it's exercising government powers is it's changed their hats now. They're not acting as Mr. French, a citizen expressing his views. They're acting with the power of the government. And when government starts taking sides on ideological discussions and debates, that's a problem. The only side the government should be taking is the side that says, look, we have freedom in this country, it's laid out in our charter, and from what I can tell, that's the side that Ms. Simpson was arguing for. So if there was a side to be taken here, it's on the side of freedom, I would say. Yeah, Kevin?
Yes. Well, I noticed, actually, as you started talking there and continued, you used the word government entity a few times there, and I thought, okay, he's going to hit them with the charter because they are subject to the charter as a government entity. I assume that's where you're going, right?
Absolutely. And that's just the critical distinction. I mean, the chair of the board of the public library here is doing a lot of talking in the media, and that's where I'm finding his comments. And he's doing a lot of talking, but it seems that he's doing talking from his own personal views rather than from the perspective that the government is supposed to have. Of course, in Canada, our Supreme Court has even extrapolated on what's called a duty of state neutrality, that you're not supposed to be for or against belief. You're not supposed to hinder or promote belief or non-belief. And that's the position that we should be seeing from this Mr. Novak, but we do not see that. He got very offended that there was an American group involved, Kevin. This group FAIR, which, you know, it does have American members. It also has Canadian members and Canadian chapters, and you don't have a lot of personal knowledge of the group, but he believes, and he quotes in the media, we have a constitution. We don't need an American group telling us about freedom. So, Kevin, I'm here to answer his call. I am not here to speak as an American. I am not an American. I'm a Canadian. I can say that his understanding of our constitution needs some improvement. If he believes that someone expressing their view that the library collection of books and materials should be representing a range of diverse perspectives, and he believes that that is a fireable offense, that seems to have some significant concerns with maybe his proper education in the Constitution of Canada, which includes the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yeah, his remarks aside, I did notice in that article that the journalist quoted the Southern Poverty Law Center on the group FAIR, and I thought that was somewhat amusing that we would have a judgment from an American organization with the reputation of Southern Poverty Law Center weighing in on an issue in Canada as well.
A little hypocrisy noted there, Kevin, when you have a guy, we don't need an American group, but we'll have an American group tell us when another American group is acceptable or not, right?
Yeah. Now, to the point that this member was making, I think that at some point in one of those articles, he had stated, well, when Ms. Simpson wrote this op-ed, she wasn't expressing the opinion of the board. She has every right to free speeches, blah, 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 you know, that she wants. But because she's writing this as the CEO of Niagara-on-the-Lake, she's taking a position, and it's not our position, so she has no right to take it. Now, what do you say to that?
Well, just because you happen to have a job doesn't mean that you lose your ability to express yourself. And I think this is a part of the debate in Canada where people have gotten way off. You know, there are some professions where expressions of opinion on matters of public interest actually can harm your ability to do your job. Now, that is a very few number of professions, and the top of that list would be judges. You know, when a judge states his opinion or her opinion on a matter that may in fact come before that judge, that's a real risk here. Where a CEO of a library just so happens to write a self, you know, on her own time, writing an op-ed to the paper promoting the very values of the library, whether she's doing that because she's an individual or whether she's doing that on behalf of the library, well, she's the CEO, which has a fair amount of administrative discretion, you would expect. So I don't understand exactly what the point would be in that regard, Are you saying that she's showing her bias in favor of freedom of expression at a library? Well, I would think that would be a strength of a library. And if he's going to take her to task for that, then you would have a different issue entirely. But the idea that, yes, the library CEO has freedom of expression, she just can't use her freedom of expression if anyone knows that she's the library CEO, which, again, you could just Google her name and bam, she's the library CEO, or at least she was. So this is, I think that's an argument without any substance to it at all, Kevin.
Okay. So in other words, if she had not put CEO at the bottom of the CEO of the Niagara-on-the-Lake Public Library at the bottom of the op-ed, it wouldn't have made any difference because people could have discovered who she was anyway. Why is she writing on this topic? You know, that's the thing, right?
Right. And I think that's there's a desire of censorship is to find any little basis on which to base their censorship. And we've seen this, whether it's the attack on Jordan Peterson for, well, you're a registered psychologist and people know you're a registered psychologist, so how dare you have an opinion on anything that we find controversial? And the same thing with Amy Hamm. Well, you're a nurse and people could find out that you're a nurse. Well, therefore you shouldn't say any of your opinions. Where does that line of logic end, Kevin?
Well, apparently it ends in Niagara on the Lake.
Well, we would love to see this situation reversed. I think this is an incredibly troubling situation. And we should mention other Niagara on the Lake residents quoted in the media, a guy named Anthony Powell, a retired lawyer there. He addressed the board before they made this decision to fire her. And he said, you know, Mr. French's opinions, he found them, you know, critiquing someone else's critique, again, a fair exercise of constitutional rights. He found them to be misguided, hateful, and offensive himself. So you know, should we cancel Mr. French because of that? Figure out where he works and you know, get him fired from his job? Well, I don't think that's certainly not the government's role, whether or not you choose to endorse someone else's opinion. And so he said, look, this is a false attack on the library CEO. There was actually another one who spoke up at the meeting in support of Ms. Simpson. This is Andre Perchias. And he was saying he strongly believes that heterodox information that is non-conforming and that goes against norms should be included in library collections. And this was a former library board member and the chair. And so he pointed to the library's own policy that says the library upholds the right of the individual to access information, even though the content may be controversial, unorthodox, or unacceptable to others. He defended her, saying that the chief librarian was supporting library policy by upholding the principles of, as well as advocating for, intellectual freedom. And I think it'd be worthwhile even going into a little bit of what this library's own policies have to say on this issue. I did take a little dive myself into this.
Yes, please. Actually, that's something you had indicated in our pre-podcast discussion, that you found out that she was, in fact, in her op-ed supporting policy.
That's right. That way. Yeah. So, you know, we saw this brewing and it came to our attention. And as a legal team, we took steps, got involved, sent a letter to the board here as well. And, you know, the library, again, this whole letter was talking about, let's not cancel books. You know, we've heard even recently about, you know, different schools banning To Kill a Mockingbird because of, you know, some language from the 1950s or 30s or something like that. And so here she's writing on a topic saying, let's not cancel books. Let's rather keep our library collections open to a diversity of materials. And the library's own collection development policy, this is the policy that she needs to adhere to, says that it is very important to protect the collection from societal and political pressures. And in some ways, you could say that the letter that you wrote from Ms. Simpson to the newspaper, that letter, in fact, is part of protecting the collection of the library from societal and political pressures. And it's really interesting to see that libraries, which have long been a bastion for free speech, a bastion for pursuit of learning, regardless of your ability to pay, that's why they're a public library, they're taxpayer supported. people with little means can go in and access books they'd never be able to afford. I mean, books sometimes, including books that I'm trying to, you know, read, sometimes they'll cost you $300 depending on the publisher. You should be able to access those books at a library regardless of whether it's right wing or left wing or what have you there. But this view of libraries in support of free speech is longstanding, and it's found in the library's own policy. Here in Niagara-on-the-Lake, they have a policy. It's called their Foundation Policy, number 5. And it is states that it's the library's fundamental responsibility for upholding the principles of, as well as advocating for, intellectual freedom. And so again, here we have a CEO who publishes an op-ed advocating for intellectual freedom, and that is a foundational responsibility of the library. And she's job action is taken against her because of that. She loses her job for that. Furthermore, there's some mention in the public commentary that, you know, library staff were having a difficulty with the library CEO who was expressing this support for libraries, including heterodox opinions in their collections. Well, the policy, this foundational policy, says that it's the responsibility of board and staff to ensure that all library users have the fundamental right to access all expressions of knowledge, creativity, and intellectual activity, and to express their thoughts publicly. Well, if that's the responsibility of the board and staff, and now allegedly the staff and the board is targeting the CEO for expressing her thoughts publicly in support of these own policies, there's some very incongruous action being taken here in Niagara-on-the-Lake. All is not right in Niagara-on-the-Lake, public library board, indeed. And this policy goes on. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like the staff is actually violating the policy the way you describe it there.
They're certainly not upholding their responsibility. And some of the comment was, you know, the board was saying, well, staff are threatening to leave if we don't take action against the CEO. Well, if staff are threatening to leave because they don't want to support the fulfillment of their own responsibilities, you know, maybe the staff should be permitted to leave, as they are free to do in a free society. If you don't want to work at a library that holds more than one view, you know, go work at the Church of Scientology or some other cult. Go ahead. But at a public library, you should be expecting a little bit of diversity of thought. And if you can't handle that, you know, if it's too hot in the kitchen, it's maybe a good time to find another room that's more suitable to your tastes.
Go get your own library.
Okay. That's right. You can curate your own backyard library somewhere. And, you know, this policy is quite explicit. It says it is the responsibility of the board and staff to resist all efforts to limit the exercise of these responsibilities, while recognizing the right of criticism. And this is the appropriate place, is when you see, you know, criticism against a particular book, against a particular speaker, recognize that that criticism is an exercise of fundamental freedoms just as much as it is an exercise of fundamental freedoms to speak or to write a book. You know, critiquing is not creating. I think that's an important distinction, but it's important to recognize that there's a right to do that. But to cave in to criticizing means that this entire board has violated, well, depending on how the vote went, and I do not know how the votes went, but anyone supporting the firing of a library CEO in these circumstances is going directly against their own policies.
And it's not a new policy. I can tell by the first point in it that it was first adopted June 27, 1974. Amended November 7th, 1983, and then 85, 2015, and final approval date, or the recent approval date, was June 2018. So this goes way back. It's good to see it kind of stretches back as well.
That's right. And I mean, it's important to note from a legal perspective what the policies of the library actually are, because when a court is going to be, you know, and potentially this case will go to court, I don't know, but if a court looks at this particular case, they're going to say, well, clearly this public board has fired someone on the basis of, number one, expressing her opinion, and on basis of, number two, allegedly being affiliated with this quote-unquote American group, although it certainly has Canadian branches, this group called FAIR. So that's a violation of freedom of expression. That's also a violation of freedom of association, both protecting these fundamental freedoms in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And so once that's established, as it appears to be, the court would say, okay, well, what is your alleged justification for this? And in order to limit someone's freedom, there must be a basis in law, and that would go to the policy. So, you know, under Section 1 of the Charter, these are freedoms that are guaranteed subject to such reasonable limits in law that may be demonstrably justified. And so if there is no limit here in the policy on the CEO's actions that can justify this, well, then the library board's really up a creek without a paddle in terms of justifying their firing of the CEO. You have to be able to show that, look, our policy says that, you know, we have to curate, you can't support freedom of expression, which that would be some way they could justify their firing of her. But in fact, the policy says exactly the opposite. The policy says we do need to support freedom of expression. We do need to resist all efforts. Staff and the board have an equal obligation to share their thoughts publicly, to advocate and resist against censorship. And so I think this is going to be a pretty significant challenge should this case go to court.
I just wanted to point out number three here. The board directs the chief executive officer to ensure the principles of intellectual freedom are integrated into all organization policies, procedures, and practices. So sounds like that's what she was doing with the op-ed. In other words, that looks to me like justification for actually declaring her position as well. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the policies go exactly in the opposite direction of this board decision to fire the CEO. And, you know, the board of the library has adopted, you know, previously, not in this last meeting, but it has adopted the Canadian Federation of Library Associations statement on intellectual freedom in libraries. And that's the statement that also expressly adopts the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, including, as it states, the fundamental freedoms of thought, opinion, and expression, and of association. And that statement, again, re-emphasizing the very points that the library itself has committed it to, that libraries have a core responsibility to support, defend, and promote the universal principles of intellectual freedom and privacy. And, you know, the listener might be thinking, well, man, we're spending a lot of time on libraries. I hardly ever go to a library. Why would we care so much about libraries? And I mean, that's a valid question, Kevin, but when you think of what venues in our Canadian society are more important to protect and defend freedom of expression in than the very place where we as taxpayers provide different books and materials for the public to learn and discuss and understand and critique and be educated, really, than the library. Where is that more tangibly, something you can actually hold visible than at a public library? And when we see public libraries in Canada beginning to cave to almost meaningless mantras of quote-unquote equity, diversity, and inclusion, then we begin to realize that the fight for freedom of speech in Canada has really progressed a long way down this track. When a library board CEO is being terminated for promoting what the library is, in fact, by its own policies, committed to.
Okay, you said that, you know, this could go to court. Obviously, it's not a case the Justice Center has taken up at this point. Correct me if I'm wrong. But if it did end up in a court, what kind of court does this end up in? Is this some kind of labor dispute? Is this some kind of charter thing that would go to some kind of administrative court, similar to things like the, other cases I think have come to mind, like Briscoe is the police officer that was taken before a police commission thing. Where does something like this go to court? A lawsuit?
Well, I would assume that this case, if it goes to court, will go to the Ontario Superior Court. It would probably be filed as a statement of claim. It would probably be filed with Ms. Simpson, the library CEO, seeking reinstatement of her job, potentially significant damages if that is not provided immediately. And so it would be an employment-based claim, a contractual claim. Obviously, that engages charter rights as well, for sure, but primarily seeking damages or reinstatement to her position as CEO of the library.
You made it sound like the charter rights are almost secondary to the argument here. It sounded to me earlier that they are primary because they have limited her fundamental rights. So maybe you could just clarify that.
Yeah, well, I think that's valid. Valid question there, Kevin. Well, of course, the public library's obligation primarily is to support freedom of expression.
Right.
So when it comes to the public at large, the primary concern is here we have a public library board that is not supporting freedom of expression. When it comes to Ms. Simpson herself, she's just lost her job. So when Ms. Simpson, if she does file a case, well, then she's out of a paycheck. And so then the violation of her charter rights might become somewhat secondary to the focus on the fact that they fired her from her job wrongfully, in my view, and wrongfully based on the Constitution. But at the end of the day, money's on the line. The Public Library Board is also an employer and has those employer obligations, which can be very significant in terms of finances.
Okay.
So maybe from the perspective of the different players involved, you know, and from the perspective of the courts, you know, certainly the charter is very centrally important from a legal perspective, but from an actual case and what would the remedies sought look like, I would assume they would look like reinstatement for a job or damages and significant damages. And so, again, this is a taxpayer-funded body playing fast and loose and, in my view, very dangerous on even the employment side, not a specialty of mine. But when you fire someone without just cause immediately, well, this is someone who's worked at the libraries for a long time. They could be entitled to significant compensation for that.
Yeah, I think that it should get mentioned here that the head of the organization of FAIR had written an op-ed that appeared in the National Post defending your organization. Because I was wondering about this, thinking, okay, it goes to trial. What is actually going to be on trial here? Because it sounds like the organization down in the United States is going to be the one on trial because the main accusation is, well, she quoted FAIR and FAIR are bad guys. And the Southern Poverty Law Center says they're bad guys and that's our case. Does it kind of hinge on this organization? I mean, the reputation?
Well, yeah, again, the comment on the legal case, you know, if a legal case is brought, it's going to hinge primarily on employment law principles and whether or not the board is acting in accordance with its own policies and obligations in how it treated its, you know, its employee, the CEO. And so we've gone over the policies that say the board has the obligation to resist censorship, resist societal pressures. And this board has tasked the CEO to defend intellectual freedom. And here they're firing her for doing just that. Well, all of that to me says the board's in deep trouble if this case does go to court. When you talk about, you know, the reputation of other organizations, this FAIR organization, for example, that's more of a public battle because I think it's clear enough that the library has taken a stand against someone's freedom of association and someone's freedom of expression. The complaints being leveled against this organization, FAIR, I believe if I read the complaints a little bit and the critique of maybe the CEO, or sorry, the chair of the library and this individual, Matthew French, their complaints against FAIR were that it's, you know, racist and, you know, doesn't somehow anti-LGBTQ, which is interesting as their CEO, who identified in her National Post piece as a black lesbian, was saying that her organization is in fact not racist and anti-LGBTQ. So, you know, that debate is more of a public debate that obviously is being had in the national papers. But from a legal perspective, I don't think that is all that convincing. Regardless of someone's opinions about a different organization, the CEO was clearly making her views expressed, and for doing so was fired. That's the real crux of the legal matter from a constitutional perspective.
Okay, so as you're saying, it's just more, that's more a public relations type battle, and that's probably why the head of FAIR published the op-ed, because they felt they were being unjustly targeted by...
And this is maybe a good warning, Kevin, for anyone sitting on a board exercising government power. If you are going to act as sort of an arbiter of truth, and you want to start labeling different groups, oh, well, that group is, you know, anti-LGBTQ, or that group is racist, you know, these comments are thrown around so frequently these days. You know, you might find yourself looking rather silly on the national stage quite quickly, because, you know, no one is the arbiter of truth, and you don't have the perspective that others would have. And with further illumination of the issue, you might change your mind. And that is exactly why government should not be engaged in this censorship and this action, as if they can define what is true and what is, quote unquote, you know, harmful expression or crossing the line of, you know, not promoting equity sufficiently. Like, these are such bogus justifications. And, you know, respectfully, but not a lot of respect to this public's library board, they should have done some serious homework before they even thought about violating someone's freedom of expression. And I think they could look to Vickery Bowles, the former head of the Toronto Public Libraries, as an example of someone who held her ground, should we say, for freedom of expression.
Okay. Well, one thing I did notice about this board member that was talking about Simpson's case, he indicated, and I find this somewhat amusing, he indicated that when she published her op-ed, it caused a lot of controversy and they weren't expecting this. And so they were kind of, you know, taken aback by how much blowback they were getting on it. And so they felt they had to act. And I guess... You might say to him, well, wow, you don't know what you started by reacting to that initial blowback, because you didn't even look at your own policy.
Right. And I mean, the idea that you can, in government, act without any controversy, and that controversy is somehow a terrible thing, is almost, you know, you don't have to look too far back in history to see a controversy surrounding someone in government and a government decision. There's going to be people with different perspectives. That's why democracy exists. So, you know, if you're not reappointed as the chair of the library board for the next term, well, you know what? That's what democracy looks like. Elected representatives can make those decisions. But to be shocked and dumbfounded at this idea that people are upset with you firing the CEO of a library because she tried to defend intellectual freedom, that's quite an interesting opinion in and of itself.
Yeah, well, I guess it's the old adage, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And so they were the first ones making noise, complaining about this letter or this op-ed by the head of the library. So obviously they got pandered to initially, and now the blowback is coming against them to a certain extent, because
any blowback we see, I mean, that's a positive sign for the country when a government board that decides itself to engage in exactly what it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be defending freedom, and instead it decides to attack someone exercising their freedom. That board should receive blowback. So it's a good sign to see people in Canada still getting worked up about a government body violating the freedom of its citizens. And you know, when you're violating the freedom of a library CEO, you're really saying, well, this library is going to engage in censorship when you're saying that a library CEO should be fired for advocating against that. And so that's a very, very concerning look for the library. I note one of the opinions, and this is, again, the opinion of the former chair and library board member. He said, "I'm shocked and dumbfounded the library board has terminated her employment with the library. Since 2012, Kathy has been a strong advocate for the library in the community and beyond, and brought stability and vision to the library." But again, the chair of the library board expressing his comments in the media does not get it. This is Novak saying... that letting Simpson go isn't about free speech, he says. Instead, it's about creating a safe space for everyone at the library. And I mean, again, this idea that to promote safety, we must violate the freedom of everyone else. You know, it's so blatantly obvious. The more you look at the censorship and totalitarian actions of government, almost always done in the name of safety somehow, you know, and we're not talking about safety here. We're talking about safety from intellectual diversity, which is, you know, some kind of safety to be feared indeed. The library CEO was advocating for the ability to engage in that intellectual diversity and was fired for it. But I do want to, you know, bring to mind again this head of the Toronto Public Library, Vickery Bowes. And you might recall, and the audience might recall, that Megan Murphy attempted to attend the library in Toronto to give a speech similar to the speech that the Justice Center got involved in that she was able to give at the Vancouver Public Library. And of course, you know, the usual outcries of how hateful, you know, some woman advocating for women's rights is, were just, you know, spoken, and there was massive protest and outrage. And the media was very much into this. And one interesting article, actually it's a CBC radio transcript, where I believe it's Carol Off interviewed Vickery Bowles, the head there of the Toronto Public Library. And this, I just want to read it because it's just so proper to hear a librarian defend what we're talking about here. And here are her responses to rather, you can look at the link, but rather objectionable questions, I would say, from the CBC, as we might assume. But here they are. She's responding to the these questions, and she says, "We, as in the library, are a democratic institution, and we are standing up for free speech. That's what I'm standing up for. I'm not getting into a discussion about the two sides of this issue, or the three sides of this issue, or the four sides of this issue." So here's the librarian speaking and saying, this is what a library is for. It's for free speech. It's not for picking sides one way or the other. And, you know, this is the woman who withstood, I should mention, pressure from the mayor of Toronto, who himself was saying they should reconsider this decision. And I'll just continue on with some of her comments. Ms. Bowles is stating, "People in the community on social media have been describing this as hate speech. It's not defined under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms as hate speech. Otherwise, Megan Murphy would not be allowed to speak about these things. She would be facing criminal charges, but she is not." Of course, Megan Murphy's never been charged with criminal hate speech. "Sometimes when you're defending free speech, you're in a very uncomfortable position where you're defending perspectives and ideas and viewpoints that many people in the community, or a few in the community, whatever, find offensive. But it is at that time that it's most important to stand up for free speech. That is what makes Canada a democratic country. And that is why we need, and that is what we need today more than ever." And so again, I wanting to continue here, but this is powerful statements. This is the kind of views that we need to see people on public library boards having. This is a Canadian view of free speech. This is, if locally for Mr. Novak, if he's listening, this is an Ontario library CEO stating these things, and he would have done well to pay attention to this. And Vickery goes on. She says, "I am committed, and the library is committed, to offering safe and welcoming space for everyone, including members of the trans community. But as a public library and as a public institution, we have an obligation to stand up for our democratic values and principles, and that free speech is something that protects everyone." When she's talking about a safe and welcoming space for everyone, she's not saying safe from a viewpoint you find offensive, but rather safe in the actual definition of the word. People will not be harmed. People will not be mobbed out of the library. And that is what was being attempted to happen to Megan Murphy at that very Toronto library event. You could see a mob of hundreds and hundreds of people that were trying to shut down freedom of expression. And that, I mean, when you have a mob attacking someone, you know, that's when you can legitimately talk about safety concerns. But this idea of safety from intellectual diversity, it's such a joke, but it's very serious when people start losing their jobs over it. And so I'll just continue here. But it really, and I really need to emphasize this is Vickery Bowes speaking, It really protects the marginalized voices in our society, and if it wasn't for free speech, those marginalized voices would not be heard. And she states to the CBC reporter, Carol Off, about the fact that a library should have the same standards in curating its collection of books and other materials as it does when allowing speakers. She says, "We use the same principles in making decisions about room bookings as we do for our collections. We have a broad diversity of information and ideas and perspectives that are all represented in all the books in our collection. And some of those ideas and perspectives people would find hurtful and painful. But we're not going to remove those books from our collection, and we are not going to eliminate programs from our branches that are controversial. And we are not going to shut down room bookings because the speaker in the room booking has controversial ideas." It's always heartening for me to see other Canadians who have, you know, worked in these spaces speaking exactly the kind of words that our society should be upholding in various situations, and certainly in this situation in Niagara on the Lake. And one of the CBC reporters asked Vickery Powes in this situation, the CBC reporter said, "Well, library workers, the union workers, they're very upset about this. They say that the staff has worked very hard to build trust in the community, to create a safe and inclusive space for everyone who uses it. And they feel that this is very damaging to that. What do you say to your own workers?" And this is what Vickery Powes said. She said, "This is about free speech. And you know, I think that it's important to understand that when you're defending free speech as a democratic institution, that the library is, there are times when there are people in the community who are not happy with that, which is certainly the situation we find ourselves in right now with the decisions we make." And then the CBC reporter said, "Well, the mayor of Toronto believes in free speech, but he has asked you not to hold this event. Will you reconsider?" And this was her response. "I am not going to reconsider supporting free speech." That's a courageous person, you know, and it sounds from what I can gather from the reports that Ms. Simpson there at the Niagara on the Lake was equally courageous in defending freedom of expression, and unfortunately has been fired for that. It is a regrettable situation, and I think pressure needs to be brought, whether that's a legal case. But certainly public pressure should be brought against this public library board and the mayor and council that appointed them to say, you're going exactly against these very Canadian values of freedom that you are violating.
Good. Yeah, I really think that she gets it. But we're going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, and because I don't think we can get out of this discussion about libraries without bringing up Drag Queen Story Hour. And how that fits in, because I could hear a defense of Drag Queen Story Hour in what she said there. You know, they're going to allow all manner of people to speak in their libraries, and, you know, they're not going to allow anybody to intimidate these people. And, you know, okay, so what did the Calgary City Council do? They put a bubble zone around libraries because of Drag Queen Story Hour. Okay, so am I hearing a defense of that in what this Toronto CEO librarian said?
Well, I don't think you're hearing any defense of the Calgary City Council's desire to put a bubble zone to stop people from protesting, certainly.
Okay.
Right. What you are hearing is that the subject matter of a discussion is not going to be the basis on which an event is canceled. And so that was very clear. Whether we're talking about exotic dances in a public library, I think that's a different discussion. And, you know, but what she's talking about is subject matter content. And she said, we're not going to be permitting that. So I think it would probably be a stretch to take this all the way to saying, well, you know, everything to do with the allegations surrounding for and against Drag Queen Story Hour is encompassed. I think that might be stretching Ms. Vowell's statements a little further than she was making them there.
It might be, yeah. But I mean, this is an issue, and it is an issue that involves libraries. And I mean, I can certainly see the people that would be against Ms. Simpson's letter being the same people who would, you know, ardently defend Drag Queen Story Hour. I mean, that's where the issue arose initially, in libraries. So, you know, they are talking free speech for thee, but not for me kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's certainly an you know, I can't speak for where their positions are on all of those things, but I can certainly say that once you start picking and choosing, the government starts picking and choosing what kind of content it's going to permit. And again, we're talking content here. We're not talking about, you know, exotic dancing performances. But once the government is dealing with the content censorship, it's certainly crossed the line of any possibility of saying, well, that the public acting through the government shouldn't be censoring other things, including, you know, for example, drag queen story hours.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll leave that one for a bit. I want to ask this directly because I wonder how to characterize what the board did in firing her. Can I say with justification that they broke the law when they fired her because they violated the charter? Can I say that they broke the law? Is that going too far? Or do I have to sort of back off and say, well, they violated the charter and a court has to decide whether they broke the law?
Well, I mean, it's you know, anyone can say their view of it. And of course, the highest law of the land is the charter. And so when you violate the charter, you are violating the law of the land. It is, of course, in the realm of the courts to declare that with authority. But expressing an opinion on it is, of course, your right as well, Kevin.
Well, I do want to be correct as well, though. That's the thing. If it's just an opinion and it's just my opinion, then I guess.
Well, for the record, Kevin, it is also my opinion that the Public Library Board broke the Constitution, violated it without justification, and also violated their own policies in firing the Library Board CEO. And I think it would be right to see them held to account for that. And I think cooler heads should prevail, and the Library Board should get itself out of taking sides on this issue and simply adhere to its own policies, which in fact support freedom of thought and intellectual diversity.
And the Charter, as it seems.
Good. Indeed. In fact, expressly, they support the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's probably a great place to end right there. Thanks, Marty, for taking us through this. It's a topic that, for me, is quite fascinating because I always like to see what happens, I guess, on the local level and how it applies to the larger issues. And this is definitely one of those cases that I guess we're all going to keep an eye on through the news because, you know, it may have caused them some grief to have it initially break, but I have a feeling it's going to go on for a while. So,
definitely. Well, you know, the fight for freedom, it's concerning to see that the front line for free speech is right through the library, but now it is, and, you know, certainly a place where we will continue to be engaged as a legal team.
Good. Well, thanks a lot. And I, again, thank you for participating in this episode of Justice with John Carpe. I hope to speak to you again real soon.
Thanks, Kevin.